Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Good morning. Oh, well, here we are. It's Sunday again. I don't know how that happens. I will say I did observe this. When you say calm and peace, and you have a South African accent, it sounds very much like caramel peas. I'm just noticing. That's what went through my mind. So good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, the song. Though it's new to us, you know, we need to do it a couple times before we could sing it as pretty as it deserves to be sung. The song is exactly the message today. And I don't know how you got that from the title of the message, but good job. Thank you a bunch, Bradfords. I am happy to be here on a Sunday morning. I'm Karen Rice, and I am the senior minister, the spiritual leader of this community, and the title of my message today is The Social Brain. So I want to talk a little bit about the way that the brain works, the gift of the brain that is, as they're doing all this current research in neuroscience, we're figuring out that this gift of the brain is so divine and in so many ways, but the way I want to focus it today is that there's something about the brain that craves interaction. And so I'm looking to create an environment where we can look at the necessity of community as part of our spiritual advancement, as the reason, as the purpose that we're looking at what matters most this year in this particular sanctuary. We're looking at this idea of what matters most in terms of the beloved community. And I love that. I have to tell you, there is something so gorgeous about the way we seem to be reshaping ourselves as a community in this idea of becoming that beloved community, or better yet, just revealing that that is the truth of who we are already. And so I found an affirmation from Ernest Holmes. Dr. Holmes is the amazing person who developed this idea, this synchronization of lots of traditional religions, ways of life, spiritual traditions, and even the classical philosophy, the ideas that come from there, and put it together in a practical approach to spiritual living. And he did such a good job that we're still here 100 years later, but 101 years ago, he wrote this affirmation in his book, Creative Mind and Success. It's a good one. I am one with all people. I am one with all life. God in us is unified with God in all. This one is now drawing into my life all the love and all the fellowship. I am one with all people and with all things and with all life. And as I listen in silence, the voice of all humanity speaks to me and answers the love that I hold out to it. There's a lot of alls in that sentence. Did you notice? We're looking at a theme of oneness. We're looking at affirming our unification with each other and with life divine, with all of life. He said that he used that term all 8 times in that affirmation. 8 times he was pulling us, calling us to this way of being together and acknowledging and seeing that. So if I was going to shorten that, I would say, I am one with all people, I am unified with God in all, and this one is drawing us into this life of love and fellowship. Isn't that lovely? You know, that's a gorgeous way to look at all of this, that we are being drawn into this union, this fellowship that I am calling the beloved community. So it's a fabulous message today, and I wanted to make a point of speaking to the naturalness, the way it's sort of inorganic for us to desire to do that, because we are born with that gift of having that urge of coming together with others. And so we're not only looking at community, but I want us to always look at all of relationships. This community represents the bigger way we live in a bigger realm of relationship with the rest of life. The way there are people that have very different ideas than we do, and yet we still are a part of that same thing called life. And I especially am excited this morning about this idea that it's okay because we were created for it. So before I get any further into the message, I did want to compliment you on all the green you're wearing and say happy St. Patrick's Day. Now, here is a holiday that is geared towards social interaction. We gather together in pubs and drink ale. We gather in kitchens to prepare corned beef and cabbage. I plan to gather and get my plate of corned beef and cabbage. I understand we're supposed to have some today. Could I have a confirmation on that? Okay, who's going to make the minister's plate? So, I've got it? Okay, because I have a board meeting today, so I really don't want to miss out on the corned beef and cabbage. That's a real treat for me. And I love the poem that Beverly read because it also reminds us that it's not only gathering, but it's like the greening. I like that idea of looking at the way we're drawn to this color green on this particular holiday. And it's a good symbol for the way we are also greening in our lives. We are also, if you look symbolically at the joy that comes from this holiday, the song and the dance and the fairies and the storytelling and the laughter and the corned beef and cabbage, and the way that we are really calling forward spring, because let's face it, even plug your ears if you're a snowbird and you're about to head home to warmer weather there. But man, I'm really tired about how cold it has been here. I am really tired of how cold it is, and I have really enjoyed sitting on my patio in the afternoons when it's been warmed up into the 70s, and that's what I want to do. I want to enjoy, you know, I hope we get a nice long spring, since I feel sort of cheated out of some of the beautiful days I usually sit on the patio, because, man, I've been cold. I don't know about you. I've been cold. So there's this beautiful way that we stand here and look at this idea of greening and stand in that way that we are welcome to warmer days. And for me, that means gathering and spending more time outside. I don't get out as much as I only go out when I have to when it's cold. And boy, and sometimes that's begrudging. I will admit, I could not live in the snow anymore, or maybe ever. So we are becoming aware of that craving to experience ourselves in terms of oneness as a social way of gathering. And that's what I wanted to focus today on. There is something that is being revealed in these studies that are continuously advancing in as we look at the way the brain functions. And what we're learning, and the research that I'm going to report to you today, is that part of the brain that makes it sort of a necessity for us to join together in one way or another. Need to be engaged. We enjoy our identifying ourselves as a part of something bigger than just our, you know, our family at home, our home life. We somehow become alive when we find the right community to hang out with and play with. And I do see that is a great reason we are seeing the world is changing towards this fascination with social media. And social media indeed helps us to interact socially with each other. But there is something the brain needs that goes beyond social media, and that's what we're going to be looking at. The brain isn't completely satisfied just from Facebook. Or Pinterest, although I'm pretty happy when I play in Pinterest, but you know what I'm saying here. So there's this spiritual idea of oneness that implies there is a relationship, a way in which we're connected to all, and it helps us, when we start to understand that spiritually speaking, it helps us then to have a better understanding of the greater whole, the way everything in the universe is indeed interconnected. So we see that there are ways people gather. People come together to create something where they can share what they have in common. They can experience a togetherness as they look for a similarity in the way they're joining, and then they can hang out together. So, you know, I found that to be true in the world of bikers. I don't mean bicyclists, Clyde. I'm talking about real bikers. Right? Amen. There's something about hanging out with a bunch of people. If you feel a little rebellious, just go hang out with some bikers. You know, they're fabulous rebels. You get to dress different. Loud noises are allowed, in fact, encouraged. And, you know, there's a whole mentality around a group of bikers. And there are a lot of women bikers now that ride their own bikes. There are people that get together for quilting. I would say their desires are slightly different than the reason bikers get together. They probably prefer quiet. They enjoy a different kind of conversation together. They like to be busy working with their hands. And I would say that musicians are another great example, or if we said music is a good reason people get together. We go to concerts. We musicians, I loved it when Rod was talking about there's something that happens to him when he hears something happening in the audience that creates more inner energy for him as a musician. And I would say that's true. He asked me if we could put sawdust on the floor so that he could hear you shuffling around in it, and I did decline there. I did have to say that's where I draw the line, but we'll negotiate. Depends on who has to clean it up, because I don't want to live with it. I know that. But anyhow, music is a really good illustration, because if you look at a bunch of instruments coming together, or even a great chorus where you have a bunch of voices that come together and they complement each other in a positive way, then you see that each individual is managing their own instrument. They're bringing their own something special to create something really big and beautiful that you could not do just alone. So, and by the way, we have bikers and quilters and musicians right here in this sanctuary even right now, and lots of other groups. Spring training is about to wrap up. We have baseball fans. And when I go sit at a spring training game with my husband, there's something very unique about the baseball enthusiasts, right? And the way they dress and how they come together and love their being there and rooting on their teams. And in spring training, you get to look for the potential players that might make the big leagues. So what I want to say is, here's a quote from an author and a speaker named Dwayne Elgin. I've quoted from him before. He's considered a great visionary in terms of being a social activist. But here are some beautiful words of his. Who we are as a society, and I want to throw in who we are as a beloved community, thinking about us specifically. Who we are is a synergetic accumulation of who we are as individuals. The character of the whole is the cumulative result of each one. And that's what it means to be synergistic. That's what it means. All the things we just spoke to there. The creation of a whole where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's how they define synergistic. It comes from a Greek origin meaning to work together. Isn't that beautiful? So when we come together in a group, we're like a recipe. We're all different pieces, different parts of the we're each an ingredient that adds something unique to the soup or the stew. By the way, Evie's recipe for her soup is now available in the kitchen. So if you've been one of those many people that have come to me and said, how does Evie pull off that fabulous soup all the time? We now have the recipe. She shared it with us. But we're all a little different. And we're different because we're made of different ingredients. We come as a package deal of all the experiences we've had, all the beliefs we've played with, all the tangos we've danced in different relationships, and we bring something spicy to add to the whole. And so community, if I look at community like that, I see that there's this divine plan. And then when I started to study this idea of the social brain in order to talk to you about it today, what I found was that this is part of a bigger divine plan that maybe we haven't given much thought to, that our brains are made for us to interact with a lot of other ingredients and to have that experience of coming together in community. So, you know, they have all this new, the new research is called the developmental social neuroscience. We talk about it as cognitive neuroscience. It's a new field of study in the brain, fairly new, not new, but they're still putting new things out like crazy as they begin to understand a little bit more about our brain. And the more they're reporting on how the brain works, the more I, as a minister, am sort of amused at how much more valuable spirituality sees, that it's really necessary to throw spirituality in there for us to have some balance, because the brain isn't like that. The brain is more like a computer that's been programmed to do these great things. And we're grateful. You know, we're grateful we can see, and we're grateful that things move in our body and that the brain sort of orchestrates life. But the brain also has a lot of influence on how we view things and our experiences. In the ways that the brain functions, the brain is designed to reinforce our beliefs. I say that periodically because it tickles me so much. You would think it's the other way around. But that is why our perceptions aren't accurate all the time, because we come to a situation with a strong belief, then we're going to see whatever's in front of us through the lens of our beliefs. It's not a bad thing. But in terms of the way that the brain craves social interaction, we can say that we're craving relationships, whether you are an extrovert or an introvert. Whether or not you think you like people or you don't like people so much, your brain still has that craving for social interaction. So our brains, you might say, that part of the brain is designed to be stimulated. And what we know is that when we stimulate our brain in different ways, that it keeps us healthier, that it's good for us, that it helps our memory, that it helps us in so many ways. It helps us stay young in our mind. And so we do things like we have puzzle books. I like, I can never say it properly. I say Sudoku, so it must be Sudoku. I don't know. Anyhow, I like those number puzzles. I really enjoy solving a puzzle, and I don't like the really hard ones that I can't do, and I don't really like the easy ones. I like those middle ones that are a little challenging, but they make me think. We've heard that if you learn a foreign language, which is increasingly difficult as you age, they say, if you learn a foreign language, that it stimulates your brain in such a way that it's really good for you. It helps our brains to be more youthful. I remember feeling when I studied algebra, I went back to school as an adult to working on my undergrad stuff. And I remember in an algebra class, I couldn't quite figure something out. And suddenly, it's like everything fell into place. It was like, I remember thinking, I think I was sleeping, in fact. And I woke up and said, oh my God, I understand. It can't see the cosine because of the parentheses. If it's outside of the, you know, and I had this great thing, and it was like I could feel something really that just felt good in my head as I began to conceive new possibilities, understand mathematics in a way that I had never been able to understand mathematics before. So, we like to, the other thing is, and this is where it gets sticky in relationships, is we kind of like to solve problems. That's a way that the brain is stimulated. And that's also where we bump into some conflict in terms of relationships. But I'm thinking that if we crave that, then maybe some of the bumps we run into or the conflicts we have in relationships are good for the brain because they stimulate us to think in new ways. And if nothing else, it's a fabulous way to learn to apply spiritual principle in our lives. You know, if all of life is just an experience, and we're at choice as to how we deal with those experiences, then all of this stuff that we talk about in classes and every Sunday can be really good for us. I found a doctor who, one of the researchers I was studying, had this quote about those types of interactions. He said this, Dr. Peter Pressman, "Social interaction is essential to the human experience. Despite that, it isn't always easy. In fact, it takes almost every part of the human brain, arguably the most complex thing ever created, the human brain, that is, it takes almost every part of the human brain to work and play well with others." Yeah, amen, right? And so if you've lived life at all, it's easy to see that there's some truth in those words. So as we're looking at the social brain, and as we look at the social brain in the experience of relationships, people having relationships with other people specifically, for this part of the message, what we see is that our brains have been created so that we have the ability to perceive social cues. Some of us are better at it than others, but the brain is created in such a way. Our brain is able to helps us to understand language. Our brain can help us when our language, even when we're talking the same language and we're not quite connecting to the same ideas, our brain is designed to help us sort that all out. Our brain helps us to recognize faces. I'm not saying you have to remember people's names. Isn't that a relief? That the brain has this function to recognize faces, to observe body language, and to hear emotion in the human voice. Now, the list I took that from was at least twice as long as the things I read off. And each of those things, and more, the ones I didn't bring in, each of them works from a different part of your brain. So if you put it all together and look at relationship, what it takes to interact with another human being, we're using the whole brain in one way or another. And the part that excites me is that it is a God-given gift. It is the way we are intentionally created to be able to find our way through relationships. And as we find our way through relating to each other, we begin to broaden our perspective and our consciousness, which gives us an ability to love people and things and life in a more beautiful way. It helps us to learn to set aside our judgments the more we participate in it. So in community, we get all of that. In fact, we get more than that. We get corned beef and cabbage some days. Here's another piece that had nothing to do with the social brain, but it was so interesting. I just have to share this with you because I know you're going to get excited about it like I did. The five senses, just the basic, I'm not talking about any of the new stuff we know. Sight and sound and smell and taste and touch, just those basic senses are wired to our emotions. Now, the reason that's interesting to me is that when we are talking about being grateful, so grateful for whatever's in your life that you feel it at a deep level, we're talking about the way that that inward involvement emotes. It puts energy in action. And so what happens inside can then, that involution becomes the evolution that is apparent in the outer world. It's the way prayer works. We pray, we feel that we are the desires of our heart. We speak openly about that ability to tap into that energetic divine power that creates all things. We boldly stand as co-creators in our own life, and we give thanks for things, knowing that it is God's will for us to experience the good that we desire. It's a different view than religious ideas that suggest God is testing us. I do think that I'm tested, but I don't think it's that God throws something down in front of me to make me a better person. I think I'm tested when I'm awake and I'm aware and a situation comes up that I wasn't expecting, like bumping your elbow on the podium there, and then I decide what to do with that. And I decide how to move on to what is there for me here? What happens here that where I can grow from that? Okay, so that was a poor illustration. Forget that whole elbow part. So as we are working our brains, as we are allowing our brains to be stimulated in community, as we now step into looking at the way we have emotions that are stirred from feelings. So there's a thought, there's an idea, maybe we get an image in our mind of it. It turns into an emotion, and then we see things that show up. But when I think about this, this is where I got interesting for me. You know, it's like the smell and the taste of things, and I think of how powerful our memory is in terms of smell and taste, especially smell and taste. My mother used to make maybe once a year pierogies. She had an old Eastern European recipe. My mother was Russian, and she would make us pierogies, and it was a lot of work, and she loved doing it for us. Usually, it was some kind of family gathering, so there would be other people around, and she would delight in it. And pierogies, the way my mom made them, it wasn't like you cook up a plate of them and you put them on the table and everybody eats dinner. It was like right out of the frying pan and brought to you wherever you were. Taste this. And so we would eat them in stages. Like you would get it when she had one ready for you. You'd get your pierogi. So the smell of a pierogi for me, I love pasta. And so there's a pasta-like dough that's rolled out, and mother put potatoes, and she used cottage cheese because it was the closest to whatever kind of cheese they had in Russia, and onions, and then she would fry them in this big old cast iron skillet, and she would fry them with onions, but not with butter. Would always be with bacon fat. Oh, could I eat one of those pierogies right now? And so, you know, it's part of it is smell, part of it is taste, but get it. It's the whole package. How many of you had real pierogies like that? I probably haven't eaten one of Mother's pierogies in like 40 years. But look at how fresh it is when we start talking about the senses. And so I think there are lots of ways we are transformed by even a memory of those senses, the touch of a newborn baby's skin. We have a new dog, as you've heard me say for a while now. She's probably not even that new anymore. But when she curls up on my lap and she lets me touch her soft, silky ears, I just melt. It is so good for me. I can just feel how good it is for me. So there's something that happens in all of that that is triggers us emotionally, and our brains are equipped to manage, not only manage those memories and file them and hold them and keep them for us, but to be able to pull them up in such a way that we can increase our pleasure simply by a memory. So what happens when you're remembering a terrible childhood event or the pain of a really awful parting in a relationship? You get the opposite. And you're stirring up, other than that good stuff that you'd like to experience, and then you're moved further, you're distanced from the pleasure that you really desire. So if we think about our brains being wired for social interactions, if we think the way the senses, how our senses can help us in terms of valuing relationship, which then makes us more likely to be able to step into community, expecting a favorable experience. Now everything starts to change. And this all comes back to spiritual principle. It all comes back to our willingness to focus on what it is that we desire, to understand or study the way things come to be, to learn that we are indeed worthy, that we are children of the divine, and that God's grace freely pours out to us. The value of the beloved community is that we get to have current, present moment experiences, and we get the opportunity to create new memories, whether we're bikers or quilters or musicians or anything else. And so educating people in understanding this stuff is a great pleasure for a minister, for a teacher, for a spiritual teacher or facilitator. You know, we teach you that there is a way that your brain is filtering information, and maybe it's not even in a direction you want because you're hanging on to an old belief you don't even know you're hanging on to. But there are spiritual ways to uncover those hidden beliefs and to step out of the old and into the new. We can learn to notice how we are reacting to situations. We can learn to choose to stop and pause and make different choices. And most important, the most important thing I've been teaching this for probably about a year, is that the experience, no matter what it is sacred. And whatever experiences or conditions you are walking through in your own life, the full potential for the desires of your heart are right there in the middle of the experience. It's all in how you look at it. So the important part of being human is, hey, believe it or not, we are adaptable. Look at the universe and see how things work in this big, broad, beautiful universe. Understand your relationship to the whole. The newest part of brain research is what they call the adaptability that they find in the neocortex. I don't care where the neocortex is, but the neocortex is more adaptable than any other part of the brain, and they say that this is a good thing, because the way in which the neocortex works is the same place where we are interacting with other people in community. Wow. This is important stuff. Yes, we can change. Yes, we can get over our biases. Yes, we can learn to get along together. And the interesting thing is that as much as we, this is just my thought, but as much as we desire community in all kinds of different ways, we also don't like conflict. And sometimes we avoid joining others in community at the risk of running into conflict. And so somewhere in the middle is this beautiful lesson, this beautiful opportunity to know that this work really is important. All you need is the fulfillment of your heart's desire. How blessed I am to be a minister at this time where I can take everything I believe, my belief in the goodness of humanity, where I can teach what I love talking about, where I can get up on a box every Sunday and speak what truths are speaking to me and allow Spirit to speak through me. And then there's more, because you know what else we get out of community? I always know what to watch on Netflix because you keep me informed. We exchange recipes. Book titles. I'm always wanting to know what you're reading. In fact, the book that you're going to discuss today is a book that about a year ago, another minister said to me, you need to read this book and you need to take it to your community. And here you are doing it. I didn't even do that for you. And so we come together and we share our demonstrations, our answered prayers, or we hold each other up when somebody's going through a crisis. We come together for prayer. We come together and we meditate, even if you're having a silent meditation. When you sit in a group of people meditating, there's power. There's power. And it's power that's always available to us, but something about sitting in stillness with like-minded people creates some crazy kind of clarity where I can recognize that power, and so can you. And so we have a board meeting in a short while, actually. We'll be doing the business of church, but I was thinking that how wonderful, you know, I've belonged to other religions before, and what I really love about us, and I believe that the board fully supports this same idea. These are the kinds of things we talk about in the board, is we're not trying to sell you anything. Isn't that wonderful? Well, except in the thrift store and the bookstore. Then buy, yes, spend your money here, it's good for the church. But we're not trying to convince you of any special something we teach. We reason here. We're not trying to sell you a creed. We're not trying to sell you a special healing. We're here to tell you whatever the desire of your heart is, you let us know. We have trained practitioners. We have a ministerial staff. We have a tremendous belief that we stand in, that no matter how big or how small that desire is, you can have it. In the words of Emma, as much as you want your good wants you. Imagine that. Imagine just walking as you're walking step by step towards your good, that your good is walking right towards you. So we got a lot of wonderful things going on all the time. I'm so grateful. We'll be talking more about our small groups and the way you can have community within community, the way you can get to know each other better. But I wanted to close this morning with a lovely quote that I found from a doctor, a PhD computer scientist, a woman named Ann Forst. Ann Forst worked at MIT as a theological advisor. Isn't that great? As they're working with artificial intelligence, they're looking at robots. She worked as a theological advisor. She has a book called God in the Machine. But here are her words. It's a perfect place to close. Our humanity does not come from our brains. It does not come from our bodies, but from our complex interactions with community. We are human because we must deal with other humans and the rest of creation. Maybe that's the best part of the beloved community as we look at this idea of a social brain. We get together because we have a safe and beautiful place to interact socially with some things that we have in common. We practice love, acceptance, forgiveness, and possibilities. So take a breath. Take a nice, deep, cleansing breath. And we'll prepare for the sacredness of prayer, the power of the words of prayer. I would invite the practitioners and the ministers that are in the room, if you would just stand and surround this community, this beloved community. We will turn our focus to the holy words of prayer. And so we still our minds as we shift from the head to the heart. And we just allow all the intellectual ideas, the words, the images, we allow them just to float around us, knowing that the gem, the sacred gem that is most important, is ours for keeping. I feel the love of God moving in this room. I feel the love of God within me. And I recognize that it is that same activity of life within each individual. That every living thing is created in the image and the likeness of that love, of that infinite intelligence, joy, and peace, and calm. Perfect order of this universe, the perfect order of the human body, and certainly the blessing of the social brain. I feel that love of God within me, and it is stirring. It is a quickening that opens the heart to even greater realizations. That there is healing always occurring. For every time we realign our mind to the mind of God, every time we stand in truth, every time we recall what it is that we are here for, and how we are created, we remember again that there is indeed something perfect within us that stirs at the sound of these words. It is love, because love is the most powerful force of the universe. And it is delight, because spirit itself delights in our humanity. It is joy and laughter and goodness. For as we bring these divine qualities forward in our lives, as we allow ourselves to express these God-given gifts, we become a part of that healing. That our physical beings, our body itself, is restored to its wholeness, so that we feel a vibrancy within us. So that we feel that vitality of life, that we are strengthened to do that which is ours to do. And there is more than that. There is the healing of the mind. There is the beautiful way in which we always unify with that one mind, the mind of God, and we experience that oneness in our own lives, that clarity, that balance, that perfection, that which reveals that craving for community, for interaction with other individuals, for a safe place to sit on a Sunday morning, or to come and pray or meditate during the week, to know that there are always activities that invite us, that call us, that open us to greater and greater possibilities. And so for these things, I'm so grateful. I feel that sense of immense gratitude just welling, swelling, growing inside of me, spilling over into this beautiful sanctuary, blessing and sanctifying this sacred ground that is our spiritual center. And so I know we are blessed in all ways, that everything we need is given freely. It comes to us, it pours into our spiritual center to the overflow. And we are thereby in this gorgeous position of creating the beloved community with lightness of heart, without worry of anything in the future, knowing that what we do is magnificent because we are magnificent beings. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. How grateful we are for these blessings and for so much more. And I release these words into the law, knowing that it is already done. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.